This week on Art in the Air features a return visit with the Chicago Quartet, the Empty Pockets, discussing their busy concert schedule and the release of their double vinyl gatefold album, Gotta Find the Moon. Next, singer-songwriter Patricia Tyson discussing her December 15th concert at Chicago Epiphany Center for the Arts. Our spotlights on Indiana Ballet Theater's holiday classic, The Nutcracker, running December 5th through the 18th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Indiana Ballet Theater, Gloria Tuohy, the founder and artistic director and the general force behind it, and of course the Classical Arts Center. We're going to be talking about their annual production of The Nutcracker and a few other things going on there. Gloria, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you so much.
Well, tell us a little bit about, I mean, and I know that before when we interviewed you about that, you try to remake The Nutcracker every year a little bit with either costuming or choreography or things. And obviously you have sometimes different players, but tell us about that, how each year The Nutcracker is not just the same retread every year.
Right. Well, we try and keep it the traditional version of the story, but we always got new costumes coming up. We just won a costume, actually. So the Sugar Plum Fairy will have a brand new tutu. Yeah.
Those are all created in-house, right?
They are. And actually, one of the dancers has now become the costume mistress. And so in between scenes, she's sewing and, you know, making sure everything's going out there fully sewn. And so she makes tutus from scratch. And she actually was the one that won the new tutu.
Wow. That's excellent. So, you're doing that. You just had your tea, by the way. That was kind of fundraiser. Tell us a little bit how that went.
Yes. It's always a wonderful event for families. And this one this year was at the Dean and Barbara White Center in Maryville. And, of course, we have our food actually donated by Strachan Van Til. So... that was always a wonderful thing to have. But yes, and then they have photographs with the cast, and there's a Santa's always there, and just a fun time. Crafts for the children, and just a fun time each year.
The lead-in to the Nutcracker Ballet, which you already have sold out performances. I noticed three performances are already sold out.
Yes, some of the school shows. Sold out.
Can you tell us about that and the dates and where it's going to be?
Yes. It's at IUN main stage, just off of I-65. And we have over 100 in the cast. Though it's a small theater, we somehow managed to get them all in there. And then it's December the 5th through the 11th. And we have 8 performances with cast from all over, including Chicago. And Zane Winders, who is a professional dancer, he's just relocated locally, and he's going to be the Sugar Plum Cavalier, and his fiance is going to be Sugar Plum. So it will be a wonderful little romantic interlude for them, as well as for the audience. So
excellent. Yeah. So, and you obviously you have a lot of local people in the company for the Nutcracker, but you also were bringing in, like you just said, other people. Do they come in by audition, or how do you get these outside people to come in?
Well, we have a number of alumni that come back to perform each year, as well as our regular students. And we our auditions are actually open auditions, so they're people from all around the community. And the outreach guest performers that come in, they're just people that we have collected a wonderful outreach of them. And we ask them each year who can come in and who cannot come in. And they 9 times out of 10 agree to come in. So
when do you start rehearsal for well, I know you have coming up in the spring, you have Sleeping Beauty, but when do you actually start casting and start rehearsal for each one of these, the timeline?
Yes. So August is when we do the auditions, and they're open auditions. Anyone can participate as long as they can dance a little bit. So, and then we have people from the community that are the parents in the party scene, and they always have fun every year. And so then the actual practice soon starts in September, and it's about a 3-month practice time.
Excellent. Now, you have some other things going on other than Nutcracker, I think, in February. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. In February, we're planning on having a gala, and it's going to be like a Murder, She Wrote type. So it's going to be audience participation. So hopefully they'll dress up and get involved and have a good time.
And where are you going to have that at?
And so there'll be halls of St. George in Sherrillville.
Okay, and that's where it was last year, because I attended last year. So
yeah, there you go. I think the only time we had, well, we even did the Nutcracker there in 2020 when we couldn't get a stage, we carried on.
That's always the place. And then finally, in our about last minute here, tell us about what you have coming up in the spring.
Oh, in the spring, we have Sleeping Beauty, and that will also be at the main stage at IUN. So that'll be in May. And then we also have Kaleidoscope in May, and that will be in Valparaiso at Memorial Opera House.
And that's Amanda's baby, right?
Yes, that's the modern contemporary. That is her pride and joy.
Excellent. Well, you can always find out information at theateribtnw.org, Indiana Valley Theater, ibtnw.org, and you can find out all about that. Nutcracker is running December 5th through the 11th. It's at IUN Northwest on the main stage, and you can find out anything you want about Indiana Valley Theater there. Gloria, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air Spotlight and sharing what's going on with you.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And a spotlight extra. Valparaiso's Chicago Street Theater rings in the holiday season with two productions. First with Junie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Sells. And next, The 12 Dates of Christmas, opening November 22nd, running through December 15th, directed by Donna Henry and Ashley Happer. Ticket information is available at chicagostreet.org or by email at boxoffice@chicagostreet.org. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kenny White, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to visit with the Empty Pockets once again. Our last conversation was on May 6th of 2022. The Chicago Quartet, the Empty Pockets, consists of Erica Brett, vocals and keyboards, Josh Solomon, lead guitar and vocals, Nate Bellin, bass player and vocals, and Adam Belasco, drummer. They ignite a bright flame by harnessing a joyful friction between Americana, folk, and rock and roll, spiked with roots soul. They have a gorgeous deluxe double vinyl gatefold edition of their number one Billboard charting album, Gotta Find the Moon, that is coming out November 29th of 2024. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It's so nice seeing you again.
Aloha.
Sans the beautiful Erica, of course.
Yeah, we're missing my wife and our singer, but she'll be back for our next show. But alas, we have to deal with just the boys.
Right. So we just have the boys today, so we can talk about a lot of things. Well, you guys have been really busy, but I want whichever you want to pick it up, maybe Josh to start with, a little bit of the background of the Empty Pockets and how you guys all got together.
Yeah, man. Nate and I have been playing music together since I was maybe 9 or 10 years old in my cousin's basement. In fact, Nate, do you remember when we played our acoustic gig at the Taste of Chicago?
Yeah.
Maybe we were 13 and you were 15.
I didn't tell you this. I just found some of the food tickets that we were given as tips.
Nice.
What year was that?
1999, I want to say.
Something like that. Yeah. And one of our first official gigs together. And Nate and I have been playing music together ever since. We didn't form the band until 7 or 8 years later. We were in a production of the Buddy Holly Story, where I played Buddy Holly, and that's actually where we met Erica. Funny story about that, I was going into audition, and they needed a Buddy, and they also needed a Joel Maudlin, the bass player of the Crickets. And I said, Nate, come and audition for me. And Nate said,
yeah, that's cool, man, but I don't read lines.
I said, no problem. You're not going to read any lines. We walk in, he walks in with the bass. Guess what the first thing that happens is? They hand him a bunch of lines. Nate has to read lines. Yeah, he makes the show, I make the show, and we become this band. Erica joins the band about a year later, and then fast forward to New Year's Eve, the day before New Year's Eve, 2017.
Eve.
Where our Ringo, Adam Belasco here, lives in Chicago now, but grew up in Connecticut, joined the band and kind of completed what is now the Empty Pockets. And we have been busy since we spoke last. I can't believe it.
No kidding.
Do tell.
Well, yeah, real quick, the name Empty Pockets, where'd that come from?
You know, we believe heavy in income inequality. We write a lot about billionaires. We write about privatizing the profits and socializing the losses. And that's kind of like what our band is about. Being a musician, especially a non-corporate musician, non-major label musician, is very much an independent enterprise that doesn't enrich your wallet, but does enrich the soul, you know? And so that's kind of who we are. I'm proud to be the Empty Pockets.
That's great. So I know you had a long tour with the famous Al Stewart. In fact, you had a concert that just as COVID started, I think it started at COVID, and you were going to be in New Buffalo, and that concert, I guess, got canceled for some reason. But anyway, tell us about playing. You were like his band for his tour. How'd that work? I mean, did you get to play some of your stuff and then play his stuff? How'd that all work?
Yeah, we're the Empty Pockets to open the show, which is great. We get to do our original music. And then we are also Al's band when he comes out. So we welcome Uncle Al on stage.
We really do call him Uncle Al.
No relation.
we're going to be 10 years together in October. And Alistair has instructed me to get a cake to celebrate our 10-year anniversary together, which will be at the London Palladium in October of next year, where we'll celebrate 10 years. Can you believe that?
That's great.
And it's going to be at the London Palladium.
Wow.
That's the place where John said to the Queen, everybody rattle your jewelry. Big Beatles fanatics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell by the jacket.
Right. Yeah. Well,
Abbey Road Studios.
I'm wearing, which I bought at Abbey Road Studios with my 10% working discount, because we were working at Abbey Road that day, and we actually recorded the album you mentioned, Gotta Find the Moon, at Abbey Road in studio.
Well, we missed this time that Adam had his NPR shirt on the last time we did interviews, so.
I it's in the laundry.
Okay. Tell about the logistics of playing with Al Stewart, some of, kind of this musician that's from the 60s, 70s, doing his music along with yours. How did that work?
You know, one of the weird things about playing with successful artists. We've backed up Kenny Loggins. We've backed up Simon Kirk of Bad Company, Gary Wright, Peter Beckett, Jeff Downs. We've done a lot of backup work. I love the band, right, and I loved Last Waltz. One of the weird things is, especially as trained musicians, they don't give you any information. No one gives you anything. There's no sheet music to Year of the Cat or Footloose that
not, not in rock. Not,
no, no.
Not
in our world.
Yeah.
We've never been handed anything. So the logistics are tough, man. You turn on the track and you listen to it and you write it down.
Write your own notes.
And then it's a little tougher with Al because he tunes his guitar down a half step. So we do that and then we transpose everything a half step down, sometimes a whole step.
Sometimes.
Depending. Depends. And then you don't rehearse at all with them ever. And you just get up on stage in front of your first audience and do the best you can. It is not how I thought it would be.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's pretty scary.
Terror.
Scary. The first date we did at Yoshi's in Oakland, which is a very quirky sushi restaurant / music venue in California, was the scariest gig of my life. We did 2 Gary Wright sets, 2 Al Stewart sets, 2 Empty Pockets sets. And I've spoken to some people since then who swear that show was good. I'm not sure about that.
At least you know you all will have such healthy brains with all this gymnastics that you have to do.
True.
Gosh.
Yeah, so I have read studies that music, you know, prevents dementia and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
The work we do, like my brain does feel tired after charting a song.
Oh, yeah.
And Al Stewart, if you know his music, is a very unique and specific songwriter. It's really interesting when you get to know someone through their work. You know, I knew Al Stewart through his work way before I knew him as a person.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And now he's just our Uncle Al.
Yeah. Now, is there anything in the future with him maybe down the road or, you know?
Oh, yeah. We're doing a full retirement tour next year. A bunch of dates in the U.S., including a run in Florida in January and a couple of cruise ships. And then we do his farewell tour in the U.K., which includes our first trip to Ireland.
Wow.
We head back to Birmingham and Manchester. And then, of course, we'll play the London Palladium and head back in to record at Abbey Road Studios. Very much looking forward to next.
Do you need a roadie?
Yeah, you want to come?
Yeah, I do. Oh, my gosh.
Please come.
Yeah, there was a day that time that I got offered that when I was running a small recording studio to do sound stuff, and I like being in a place, so I ended up being venue managing the different places I was at. So that's great. Any other people that you might be working with, like the Al Stewart, or you kind of locked in with him for right now?
This is, I think, our last major year with Al. We are looking forward to working with Simon Kirk, the drummer of Bad Company, some more. Okay. We've done an album together and some shows, and we're heading back into the studio with Simon. So that'll be pretty exciting. And then we have a original studio album that we're finishing and plan on releasing in the next year or so. Right. Along with all sorts of other stuff we're doing. I mean, a couple weeks ago on the 15th of November, we released a cover of an Al Stewart song. Called In Brooklyn that we recorded at Abbey Road. And you can listen to that.
You can listen to that during our show because that's the one song we're going to play somewhere.
Listen to that.
Yay.
In fact, I'll tell you what, why don't we do it right now since you teed it up already and we can talk a little bit more about it. That's In Brooklyn. Take a listen.
Oh, I come from Pittsburgh to study astrology, she said as she stepped on my instep. I could show you no. Come back to my place, I will show you the stars and the sun.
and that was In Brooklyn. Great song with the Empty Pockets. So we appreciate that. Wow.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, I love kind of the ballady style of it too. So, which is not always what you guys do.
No, we're usually bluesier. Peter White was in studio with us, who's Al Stewart's longtime collaborator. He randomly almost got very well known in the jazz world for his nylon string guitar. So having Peter on that track, having Al in the control room at Abbey Road, having Erica sing into the 1959 Telefunken microphone that Paul McCartney sang into.
Oh, I know. Gosh, it just gives me the tingles, really.
That's such a brilliant song. It's the first track off Al's first major album called Love Chronicles. That Jimmy Page played on, that Fairport Convention played on. Right. So we're very proud to kind of really put a thing out there with our own Empty Pocket spin on it that is written by Al Stewart.
Well, that's fantastic. I also, we don't have time to play it, but the Silent Funky Night, that's kind of a fun one to listen to too. It's a different take. I don't know if everyone liked it, but I loved it. It was kind of great.
Yeah, sometimes you got to take the point of a song and reverse it completely.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell us about your songwriting process. Who does what? Who? How that collaboration works, or how your songwriting does?
Starts with Josh, usually.
We play a lot together. We do about 110 shows a year. And then on top of that, we rehearse regularly and we jam and improvise regularly. So what usually happens is I'll have an idea formed, 10%, 50%, 60% of a song. I'll bring it into everybody. And that song kind of makes it to the proverbial next round based on everyone's enthusiasm and parts that they put in. You know, I've learned being... Part of the cool part of being in a band is you can't anticipate what everyone else is going to do. So like if you take our song Gotta Find the Moon from that double vinyl, there's this bass part, bum ba dum bum 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 ba da dum bum. And I didn't have that in my head when I wrote that song and brought it in. I remember Nate put it down. Do you guys remember this?
Yes.
And then we rehearsed like three times later and Nate didn't put it in. And he was like, "What? You remember what I'm talking about?"
Yeah, because I was like, "Well, let's try something different."
And we were like, no,
you already came back.
So maybe perhaps unusually, we all write everything. We split everything because it's too hard to tell what is important. Everything's important. Right. You know, what had an impact. That drum part changed, that guitar part, which made that lyric change. So it's just this kind of ongoing, organic process. You know, I got to say, I much prefer to play it live for a while before we get into the studio because it evolves over time. And then we write enough material that we don't need to put it all on an album. So only the stuff that we feel we're getting enthusiasm internally and externally, I think, does actually end up on an Empty Pockets album.
Right.
Yeah, there's a richness to that developing, too. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I don't think you could speed it up. You know what I mean? It just takes time.
Yeah, it's part of working out the art is working out the art between the artists who are all making it, but also then working it out between the audience and the art. And, you know, us and stand-up comedians, I think, are two of the
good point
people who can go out and then take the same thing and, like, hammer it out in front of other audiences until it really works.
Until ripens, yeah. Yeah, it's good. I have a question. Did playing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame develop any special opportunities for you directly related to that?
It did. We were able to back up a guy called Richie Furay, who was in a band called Buffalo Springfield with Stephen Stills. And
also in Poco.
In Poco, too. Yeah. And he was in Buffalo Springfield with Neil Young. And I love Cleveland. It's funny. Like, it's a city that I feel like doesn't get a lot of love.
They get a bad rap.
They get a bad rap, but
Cleveland's great.
We've spent a lot of time in Cleveland and playing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's a super inspiring place. You know, the legends, just, you know, drawing inspiration from Chuck Berry or Buddy Holly or the Rolling Stones. We've played there twice, and it's always kind of over the top.
Should be.
I know it's Cleveland's kind of this city that gets a bad rap, and I don't quite understand why. So here's something, not, you know, you guys are doing music all the time. What do you like to do when you're not doing music, each of you?
I love baseball and fantasy baseball. We go to a lot of games as a band. We listen to a lot of games in the van. I'm wearing a baseball hat right now for you listening on the radio.
We played three national anthems this year, one for the Guardians, one for the White Sox, one for the Dodgers. So that's two playoff teams and one historically bad team. That was fun. We are a baseball band. I love reading. Like, I read fantasy. I read this dude, Brandon Sanderson, who writes a million fantasy books. And they...
I like to cook, but I'm also really into sumo wrestling. And there's a competition in Japan
right now.
Are you?
Yeah, completely. Guilty pleasure.
Nice.
You mean watching sumo wrestling? Watching sumo wrestling, not doing it, right?
And konnichi.
Unfortunately, I think my knees and hips wouldn't support my career at sumo, so I'm going to have to stay playing bass. But I do love to watch it. I'm an Enho guy myself, but Aki Bono is doing some great stuff.
That was a long time ago. I'm tired now.
And Josh, you might be able to speak to this. What does Erica like to do in her spare time since she's not with us today?
Oh, my gosh. Erica is a very passionate WNBA fan. She was gifted a championship ring from the coach of the Seattle Storm. Wow. And Erica is very passionate about women's rights and suffrage and pro-choice. And she spends a lot of her time doing that. We all actually love baseball. Adam loves baseball the most. But as a band, I think we've been to 11 or 12 stadiums together.
I think that is right. But you know what? To our maybe our Indiana listeners, let's double down on that. We're a basketball band, too. I'm a huge college basketball fan.
Especially college basketball.
Erica loves basketball, too. We went to a college basketball game last year.
We did. We saw
Watched Hoosiers many times.
Yeah. We've seen the film, and we like Hoosiers.
Of course, we're in the northwest corner of the state, and while basketball is important, we're kind of still part of Metro Chicago in a way. So, you know, it's like, you know, the rest of the state doesn't always own up to us. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's northwest Indiana. That's the region, you know. So,
well, we love you. We love you, too. And Chicago's great, too.
Okay. So, well, I mean, you are a Chicago-based band in most part, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So, I mean, but you're playing all over the place. I mean, it's like I look at your calendar and it's like, oh, my gosh, they're never home.
No,
do you have a local place that you just sort of drop in on and play?
We play Space in Evanston and City Winery on Randolph in Chicago.
Yeah, nothing that fancy. Is there like a local, like the corner local place that
once in a while we'll drop into a jam to Phyllis's? Yeah. You know, like I like to do an acoustic set I haven't done in a while at Uncommon Ground.
Oh, yeah.
To go see music at the Burlington, you know, I like to.
Yeah, can I plug my other bands right now?
Sure.
I'm in other local bands. I just played a show at the Burlington in Chicago the other night with my punk band Acceptor.
And they're very good. I've seen them like 10 times, super melodic. And going out to see like a punk show is always really cool for me. Like seeing four bands, they've all written their own songs. It's so loud that you have to put on earplugs, you know, like. But Chicago's cool like that in that we have so many clubs and we have so much happening every single day. Yeah. It's one of the reasons I love visiting and playing New Orleans is you could just walk around and go see some more great music. And we have that gift in Chicago for sure.
Yeah. Excellent. So you got a heavy schedule coming up. We have quite a few minutes left, but I mean, tell us a little bit about what you have coming up like in December into next year.
We got December 1st in Evanston.
Yeah, at Space.
And at Space. And then we head to Minneapolis on the 3rd. We're calling it our Mistletoons tour. Just the appropriate amount of holiday music.
It's the right amount. It's not too much. It's not too little.
You mentioned our infamous version of Silent Funky Night, where we take the 3, we make it a 4, and instead of silent, we do it as loud as we can.
Listenable, though. We're not shoving holidays down your throat. It's very listenable.
We have original songs, because we're Midwesterners, about snow. Snow and snow shoes. And my favorite of our holiday songs is our myth that we're creating about the 26th of December, an extremely important day where all the elves and Santa and the reindeer finally get to take a day off. And I imagine them having a party at the North Pole. And that's one of our holiday songs called Party at the North Pole.
Pro-labor.
We're very pro-labor. We're the empty pockets.
Of course. And anything else into the next year you're going down in 2025? I know you're going out of the country.
Al Stewart year.
All the time.
Back to Arizona. Oh, we're playing the Celebrity Theater, which is one of only two theaters left in the nation that is spins. We play both. Wow. It's a theater at of the round, but the stage actually turns.
Rotates. A rotating
while
stage
you're
is a
playing. Trip. It's a very busy year for us next year. Check out our tour schedule anywhere you
you check on our website or whatever. But
tell us the website and how people can find you, because we're almost ready to wrap up here in about a moment.
TheEmptyPockets.com is the website. You can find us there. At TheEmptyPockets is our social media handle on Instagram, Facebook,
TikTok,
YouTube.
Yeah. Or if you go to your favorite search engine and type in TheEmptyPockets, and you're going to get taken to all of our stuff.
It's funny about Google. We just played with a band called America, and they named themselves before Google in the 70s. You could never name a band America now.
No, I couldn't.
America band.
But you can Google us.
Yeah, you can Google The Empty Pockets. Well, we appreciate you coming back on Art in the Air, and hopefully sometime we can get Erica to join us again. That's Josh, Nate, and Adam from The Empty Pockets. Erica, of course, not here. And you can find their schedule at TheEmptyPockets.com. Thank you so much for coming back on the show and sharing your musical journey with Al Stewart and beyond.
Esther, Larry, thank you guys so much.
We really appreciate you having us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm serious about the roadie stuff, so.
All right, you send us an email.
Seriously.
We're ready for you.
Art of the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Frank Ferrante's friend Groucho Marx, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM. You bet your life. And tell them Groucho sent you.
We are pleased to welcome Patricia Tyson to Art on the Air. Patricia is a classically trained pianist and singer, and also a hospice registered nurse. She has composed over 500 hymns, choral works, and songs of inspiration. Many songs are in various languages. She has a CD entitled I Shall Abide, as well as self-published songs. She recently started Shalom Music Incorporated, a 501c3, which provides the creative arts to hospice patrons at no charge. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Patricia. It's really wonderful, wonderful meeting you.
Aloha.
Well, Patricia, we always like our guests to tell us their origin story. And so I'd like to give you an opportunity to do that. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Patricia and your journey.
Well, thank you for asking. And it's funny you say where I was and where I am now, because that's a part of the concert where I started, where I'm going. So I started out as a kid on the south side of Chicago, on the low end, 45th and Calumet. And my mother started me with piano lessons at 5. And she drugged me kicking and screaming most of the time. It was fun for a while. But she would not let me stop. She stayed with me even when I started dating. I wanted to stop. And she's like, no, no, no. You're going to keep practicing. So I was classically trained, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, Chopin. But then I went to Pilgrim Baptist Church and I was exposed to many genres of gospel music or church music. So the hymns, the anthems, and the gospel. And the gospel choir was directed by Thomas A. Dorsey, who's considered the father of gospel music. And I was fascinated because the gospel choir clapped. The senior choir was more astute. Well, they didn't clap, basically. They didn't clap. They didn't move. So, of course, as a kid in the 70s, I wanted to clap, you know, hey. And so Professor Dorsey, as we called him, would let me play along with and accompany the gospel choir. And there were a couple of times where I sang with him or I'd take a lead and sing a song. So that music had a tremendous influence, but I didn't realize how much it influenced me until I started writing music. And it's kind of a dying art right now. People don't do that anymore in the church scene, but it's very much a part of the music. And at first I wanted to not write gospel-y. I was like, no, this is too churchy. But as my music began to change to social justice, I kept that same
flavor. So it has kind of a churchy feel, but the whole point of music for me is to uplift and inspire and motivate the listener. So I want us to be happy. We need to be happy right about now. And hopefully it's not superficial, but the words are so important in music. So what am I saying? And what are we singing? And the two come together. So that's my goal.
So it sounds like it wasn't until you got exposed to the gospel that that's really when the music took hold for you. It seems like you were kind of complying with what your mother wanted during those early classical years, but it just sounds like the gospel is, that's when you knew music was like a really important part of your life.
Yeah, it was fun. And then my mom did allow me to experiment. So I was in the band in seventh and eighth grade. I took French horn. I studied bass guitar. So that I was a funketeer. I was like, whoa. I loved Parliament. So I wanted to be cool. I didn't want to be square. And yeah. Square with classical music. So I was able to kind of escape the squareness by, you know, learning gospel and playing bass guitar.
Were you also doing other types of arts in like elementary school and high school? And was, you know, your mom pushed for piano. Was she a pianist? Was the family musical?
Not really. She could chord, and she always played on the black keys. But she would listen at every lesson she came with me. And she had a black composition book, and she took meticulous notes. And so I had to practice for an hour a day, 6 days a week. I got Sundays off. But I'd be in the living room playing and, you know, fumbling, doing whatever. And she'd be in the kitchen cooking. And she was like, that's not right. Do it again. I'm like, how do you know? Watch your fingering.
Oh, so she had a good ear.
But my dad was actually a jazz aficionado. And he would kind of whisper in my ear, learn Duke Ellington. Learn the jazz. That's real music, you know. So mom was having me practice scales. And dad was making sure I knew how to play Take the A Train.
That makes total sense. I want to kind of explore what you actually do for a living, because that also it kind of infuses your whole new kind of mission with the music. And so tell us a little bit of the history of how you got into nursing, and then, of course, what you are currently doing in nursing, and how that inspired you to, form your non-for-profit and inspire your music.
Oh, boy, that's a good question. So I flitted around during my 20s as a musician. I would teach piano because I was a music education choral major. And so I would teach, but I wasn't certified. Living in California at the time, you had to have a certification to teach. So I didn't have that because I didn't want to go back to school for that. But at any rate, so I was just kind of flitting around, having fun, living in L.A., and my mom, always in the background, in my ear, and she's like, you're going to turn 30. What are you going to do with your life? Like, wow. So when I turned 30, it actually, something clicked. And I started taking pre-med courses. But I discovered during that pre-med journey that I like to sleep and doctors have to be on call. So that didn't work for me. And so I switched to nursing because I thought I didn't have to be on call. Well, surprise, hospice nurses are on call. That's what we do. We're on call at night too. But any rate, when I went through nursing school, I moved back to Chicago, went to St. Xavier University, lived with mom and dad to my chagrin. And I was at that point in my mid-30s. And I went through my clinicals and did not like a single course. I'm just wondering, what did I just waste all these years taking chemistry, biology, physics? And I hated it. I spent one day with the hospice nurse and it made sense. It's like, well, bite all you can, do everything you can. But at some point you say enough I want to go home. I want to be with my family. Mm. So hospice was what I decided to pursue. And I would run from it. I'd try something else after I became a nurse. I'd try pediatrics, hematology, oncology, med surg, telemetry, but I'd always go back to hospice. Wow. So I finally, after I lost my mom, which was in 2020, I finally said, you know what, stop running. It's what you do, and it's what you do well. And I have the certification in palliative and hospice care, so it's my specialty now. And here I am. I work for Advocate Aurora. Woohoo! Love them. Love them. They're great. And they just allow me to flourish and do what I do well.
You know, we want to sample some of your music. And, of course, you sent us a couple of ones, but I wanted you to, and we're going to talk about, Esther's going to ask you about one later, but I was particularly taken with Cat Lady. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll give a listen to that.
That's me.
Okay.
So I'm Cat Lady. But everybody knows a cat lady. I have four cats. And some people will say that's not a lot. The average person would be like, four cats.
Four cats.
Yeah. But cat people and animal lovers are just the kindest, in most cases, the best people. It's like, give me a cat. Give me a dog. Something to play with, you know. So I wrote this song really about myself, and I hid it because I was ashamed. I'm like, I don't want anybody to know this. And one day I brought it out, and people loved it. In fact, the recording of it is the first time it was done publicly.
Well, so okay. Well, we'll take a quick listen to it. Here is Patricia Tyson's Cat Lady.
Cat lady living down the street with a whole lot of kitties wrapped around her feet. She's the sweetest soul you'll ever meet. Cat lady. Cat lady stays by herself. No one knows her story, she will never tell. You don't know her reason, don't you judge her? Yeah, that cat lady. The Bible says that a man is wise who cares for the needs of all the animals' lives. But even the kindest acts are cruel of an evil man. He ain't no good. Cat lady, no one understands how she feeds and loves and no one gives a damn. She holds her head high and does the best she can. Cat lady. Cat lady ain't nobody's fool. You just need to walk a single mile in her shoes. If not for the grace of God, it could be you being a cat lady.
Animals' lives, but
needs of all the animals' lives. But even the kindest acts are cruel of an evil man. He ain't no good. Cat lady. Cat lady.
And that was Patricia Tyson on Cat Lady performing live. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
So that predated Cat Ladies, right?
Yeah, especially in the current genre, what's going on? We don't want to be eating cats, right?
So. Oh, no.
Eating cats. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. So you would describe your music as kind of a mix of a whole lot of things. And I know you sing in other languages also. Now, are these languages that you know, are you fluent in, or just how does that work?
Not at all. So if I find, for example, a poem that's in another language, I can easily just make it a song. I have... at the concert that's coming up, and I do speak a little French, un petit peu, but not much. I wrote a song, and I knew I wanted it to be French. So I went to Alliance Française, which is in Chicago, and I paid for an interpreter to make it. I said, okay, here's the English. I want it in French. And they came back. I have a former student who does sing French fluently. And I asked him to sing. Sean Harris is going to be singing that song in the concert. So I don't have to sing. In fact, I'd rather not sing. I'd rather other people sing my music. So my role models are like Dolly Parton or, you know.
Those. Oh, yes, with her suitcases of songs written, yes.
I have suitcases.
Yeah. I think it really comes to the composition seems to just flow from you, just seems effortless.
Thank you. So it's whatever catches my attention. Usually it's not always, there's so much tragedy out here. But if it catches my attention, chances are I'll write about it.
Yeah. So I always find it so interesting, the question of, is it the music or the lyrics that come first? You know, do you have a particular, and I know you do a lot of things that don't include lyrics as well. So is it truly just inspiration based, or do you have
it's always inspiration based. Usually a phrase that will, you know, get my attention, and I'll build a song around a phrase.
So I'll give you a phrase right now.
Oh no.
I will. I'm going to not put you on the spot. So I love your story about Mississippi Tough. Can you tell us about that phrase and maybe give us some of those lyrics, please?
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking. So this song is my mother's song. My mom was from Mississippi, and being her caregiver helped me to see her in a different light, because she was always mom. You know,
but
being her caregiver, I saw her strength, her tenacity. I saw why everybody else loved her. I took her for granted. She died at 95 years of age. And she was, you know, her home was so important to her. She was proud of her roots. And one day she had dementia, but she understood so much. And she was very intelligent. And one day I told her, I was fussing at her, actually. I said, Mom, you're Mississippi Tough. You are so stubborn. And then I said, you're Mississippi Strong. And I went, uh-oh, that's a song. Mississippi Tough, Mississippi Strong. And I just developed the song from that phrase.
Yeah, it's a wonderful song. Can you tell us some of the lyrics, please?
Sure. And this is her story and her song. So the first verse says, she grew up eating collard greens, hot water cornbread, black-eyed peas. She loved her mother and her father, too. The oldest of eight, and everybody knew she was Mississippi Tough. She was Mississippi Strong. Mississippi Tough, come what may. This is her story. This is her song. She was Mississippi Tough in all of her ways. Verse 2. She went to a college, to an HBCU, Southern Christian Institute, is now Tougaloo. She moved up north to Chicago, and then she met a man, Moses, and her journey began. And it goes back to the chorus.
Yes.
Because we are almost getting ready to wrap up, and we want to make sure that we have time to talk about, because we're in our last few minutes here, about your concert. Now, you said you're going to have other people performing. Can you tell us a little about some of those people and about the venue itself?
Sure. So this is a birthday concert. My birthday is December 19th. I'll be 68. And as I said earlier, I think we were just talking, I have a suitcase full of music, a couple of suitcases that people have not heard. And I know it's good music. And it's like, who's going to hear this before I leave this earth? So I was like, nobody's knocking on the door in Merrillville. So let me put myself in concert. So I rented Epiphany Center for the Arts, a beautiful landmark building at 201 South Ashland. And that's where the concert will be December 15th from 5 to 7 p.m. I'm going to do a couple of songs, but mainly I want other people to sing my music. So I went to friends and asked them if they would sing, and they agreed. So it's a story that's in the music going back to the 70s when I sang with a group called Love Generation. So there's somebody that I'm in touch with from Love Generation that's going to sing the first song I wrote at 17.
Oh, that's so lovely.
That's a great connection.
So it goes on. Yeah. Mississippi Tough is going to be another song. It'll be in there, and I'll be doing that song.
And this is also the launch of your 501c3 Shalom Music Incorporated. So you'll be introducing that to the public as well.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful combination of hospice care mixed with the creative arts.
Yes, and I hope to do more concerts and feature other artists, not just me.
Real quickly, you said you have a CD done. Is it available? Will it be available at the concert, or is it not ready yet?
I didn't like it.
Okay.
So I never released it, but it is on YouTube. If you put Patricia Tyson, I Shall Abide. You can hear it with all the glitches. It is it's a Christian CD.
Got it. Well, so, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Year and sharing your journey in music and hospice care. That's Patricia Tyson. Her concert's on December 15th, 2024, 5 p.m. at the Epiphany Center. And that's 201 South Ashland Avenue in Chicago. Tickets are available at the door or online at epiphanychai.com. That's epiphanychai.com. Patricia, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Year and sharing your musical journey.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Patricia.
Thank you. Both of you are great.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com.
patreon.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.